some words of trouble. You never know, do you? We will see. Is this very loud? Do you want it lower down? That's okay. Okay. Fine. So I'm going to read. Is my PowerPoint up? This is on. Do I have to do anything? Just so that you can follow the reading with me. That's fabulous. So very well-known story that I'm going to be reading this morning, but I was reliably told at the beginning that you were doing parables, but when I came and saw your lovely ladies, I think it was all ladies that day on the Thursday, wasn't it? I know it's not a ladies group. And I mentioned that. There were a few looks that gave me the indication that not everybody had been going through parables. But because I'm a good girl and doing what I'm told, we've got a parable this morning. So I'm going to read about the Good Samaritan here. So on one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. "Teacher," he asked, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" "What is written in the law?" he replied. "How do you read it?" He answered, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." "You have answered correctly," Jesus replied. "Do this and you will live." Just going to check it is moving. Great. But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, "Who is my neighbor?" In reply, Jesus said, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, he passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he travelled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 denarii and gave it to the innkeeper. 'Look after him,' he said, 'and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have had.' Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers?" The expert in the law replied, "The one who had mercy on him." And Jesus told him, "Go and do likewise." So, well-known story. I'm sure you've heard this one a number of times in the past. This is the roadway that goes down from Jerusalem to Jericho. Or is it up from Jerusalem to Jericho? It's up from Jericho to Jerusalem. Getting my head around that there. So it's about 3,000 feet higher, and in Jerusalem, that is, than Jericho. And it was steep and rocky, and it was often a place, and you can see that here. It's easy, isn't it, for robbers to hide. These days, they travel on roadways, and it's okay. But this would have been the road that they would have used. And people traveled on it very often. It was one of those places that you needed to get to from one place to the other. Why anybody would travel on it alone, I don't know. But from this story that Jesus told, these people were all traveling alone. So we've got a what if moment. You have 2 minutes for this what if moment. I want you to think, which might mean that some of you have actually either got to turn around or lean in to talk to somebody, but actually talk to somebody just for 2 minutes. What if you were, and you can pick whichever of these, the lawyer, the priest, the Levite, the Samaritan, the robber, or the injured man? Have a think. You're on this road, you're walking along, or you're connected to this story. what would be going through your mind when you see this? But please try and think outside the box and try not to all be the injured person, because you'll all just go, I would be thinking, I hope someone helps me. So can we move our brains a little bit further than that? Just 2 minutes. Have a quick chat. Okay, I hate to stop your discussion because you're obviously having lots of fun chatting to each other. But let's have a little think about some of these people. So what if you are the lawyer? I don't know if any of you discussed being the lawyer. He felt the need to justify himself. It's an interesting phrase to use, isn't it? So the lawyer is asking this question. Now, we don't know whether he's being mischievous and just asking it, thinking, I'm a lawyer, let me see if I can trick him up. Maybe he genuinely wanted to know how he could obtain eternal life. Or perhaps he was just thinking, I want to justify that I'm doing all the good stuff and I'm doing what the commandments say, so therefore I'm okay, aren't I? I am holding on to the law of Moses instead of moving in to the grace of Jesus Christ. But we are on pivotal points here, aren't we? Jesus has not yet been crucified and risen, and so people's understanding is most probably more blurred. But he wants to justify himself. Have I got this all sorted and correct? And then he hears this story. Now, I don't know if anyone here is a lawyer, and I'm not going to ask because that's very dangerous ground to go onto. But one would hope that lawyers want to see justice. And I don't know whether he felt this story was very just. He might have thought to himself, how dare it be a Samaritan? Because we all know they've got it wrong, haven't they? They worship God on the Mount Gerizim, I'm never quite sure how you pronounce it, and we, as Jews, we've got the bloodline coming down from Abraham, and we worship God on Mount Zion. We're the ones who've got it right. How dare it be a Samaritan? I'm a lawyer, I know what I'm talking about here, and I expect Jesus to be saying things that tie up with the way things should be. Isn't it easy for us to click in to feeling this isn't how it should be? How dare a Samaritan, one of the lowest of the low, be the one who comes along and is neighbourly? I wonder if you imagined being the priest. And of course, I expect you were saying to each other, well, the priest would have been washed and holy and everything else and wasn't allowed to touch dead people or almost dead people or anything with blood, etc., etc. And he needs to be pure and he'd gone through all the rituals and all of this, and perhaps he is walking up to Jerusalem in order to do something in the temple, and he would let everybody down. Everybody's relying on me today. I've got a duty to perform. And if I go in and they see blood on my clothing, they'll say, you've let us all down today. Nobody else here is pure enough to go in and do whatever. You were the one who should have done it. I live with the responsibility of being a priest. You've got spiritual practices that have taken over so strongly that you don't notice the people. We're all about doing what we should be doing and staying pure and holy as the priest should have been, that we've not noticed the grubby people. And we are talking about a man who, if you remember how it was read, was half dead. We are not talking about somebody, you know, who tripped over and has got a little graze on their knee. But of course, I can't let down all of this establishment. Who knows quite what went through the priest's mind? He might have been thinking, well, do you know what? I'm a bit above this. Because I'm a priest. I'll leave it to, I think there's a Levite coming. I'll let him deal with it. Because Levites were not quite of the same standing. You know, we are the chosen of the chosen. The Levites were the chosen to be the priestly tribe, but we are the priests of the priestly tribe. I'll leave it to the next one. Someone else is coming along. Can see them in the distance. You'll be all right, mate. We'll leave it to them because they don't need to be quite as clean as me. Who knows what goes through their mind? What about the Levite then? Dominated by the legalistic duty of being the tribe of Levi and also all the things that happen. They need notice of these things. Well, I would have come planned and I would have come prepared, but actually I am also needing to be ritually clean. So things tie up with both of them. And are the rules and regulations that we live by getting in the way? And have we become so legalistic we no longer see people? I'm going to church this morning and I'm awfully sorry, but you know, there are people on the road and they're in my way. Come on, hoot, 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 I need to get past. I need to get to church. Oh, I can't believe it, that person's struggling to cross the road. Is nobody going to stop who's not busy getting to church to help them? What if you came in late because you helped somebody? Has the legalism of the church made it unapproachable? Has it made it inaccessible? Do we have, and possibly wrongly perceived by folk who don't come, rules, regulations that have made this an elite and an exclusive instead of an inclusive place to come to? I expect if we went out, did you drink from one of these? No. Thank you. I expect if we went out and asked people, why do you not come into church? We'd put it more politely than that, but if that was what we were trying to understand, we would get a whole variety of answers. And some of them would connect up to this legalism that this Levite is showing us. And some of that would tie up with, well, that's the way you do things there, so, you know, I don't feel welcome. And some people would think to themselves, I don't know when to stand up or sit down. I don't know what page we are in the book. I don't know, and so I don't feel that I'm part of this. How accessible do we make this? Doesn't matter if you came at the wrong time. Doesn't matter if you sat in somebody else's seat. Certainly when I was young, there were some people who you certainly knew if you'd sat in their seat. How inclusive is that? I always sit there. That's the family row. Do you know that going back many years, there was pew rent? How dare you sit in my seat? I paid for that seat. I can't believe it. And they had a little brass plaque to prove it. And basically, this seat belongs to them. And you get the better view. Or perhaps you get the cozy corner so you can sleep during the sermon. But how easy it is for this place to feel exclusive instead of inclusive. I wouldn't be welcome there. If they knew what I did, I wouldn't be welcome there. Part of my working life was putting contracts on people. Oh dear, that sounds as if I'm hiring men with guns, doesn't it? Or people with guns. But in order for people who had been in prison to be able to attend a church. And I would work very hard to protect the church and the people, but also to find ways that they can engage somehow. You can't come on a Sunday, but you could go to this group. Some way that we can help those people see Jesus. Because I hate to break this to you, but it's not all about us. But that's how we make it, isn't it? We make it all about us. So what about our Samaritan? How does it feel to be the outsider? I wonder how the Samaritan felt. I wonder if he thought, I'm not somebody who truly belongs on this road because I'm a Samaritan. I wonder if he's somebody who thought, well, I know there's going to be danger and I know it's going to be tough, but I'll stop anyway and I hope the robbers won't get me. It was dangerous to stop and help. Extremely dangerous. He was very brave to stop. But he made the decision, I'll do it anyway. And sometimes we get to points and we see things and we think, oh no, I won't engage with that. Because, you know, what'll the neighbours say? What'll people think? He may have even thought to himself, do you know what, I think the injured man doesn't want me to touch him because I'm a Samaritan and there he's a Jew. And I will contaminate him. As opposed to the priest and the Levite thinking, I will be contaminated. But I wonder if anyone discussed being the robber. Or did you all go for, a hand went up. You were even prepared to admit it. I wonder how it would be caught in a lifestyle where you're doing things that means that you are stealing the peace from others. In my cheekier moments, I have occasionally said to the cold caller, who is obviously a scam, could I just ask you a question? And they usually think, oh, this is going to be good. I've obviously got them. And I'll say, can I just ask you how well you sleep at night? And they say, well, okay. And I say, really, you sleep well, do you? Oh, yes, I do. I say, even if you've spent all day scamming people, you still sleep. I'm not advising that. It's me not being perhaps quite as good and helpful as I should be. But I wonder how these robbers felt. Or I wonder if some of them had been people who'd got caught up. And this is just the gang I belong to. Because no other gang will have me. I don't feel welcome anywhere else. So I now feel part of a gang where the people actually look out for me. And we're all in it together. Or perhaps they were thinking, you know what? I feel that I'm just beyond being accepted by anybody else, so I have no choice. Perhaps they thought, I've got nothing. And the only way I'm going to be able to feed my family is to steal. I'm not saying any of that is good, but sometimes we need to put on the shoes of other people to understand how is that robber going to feel that this is an acceptable place to come on a Sunday morning? And how many of you, when this service is finished, and perhaps you go and get a cup of tea or you chat to somebody else, will think, I'd better take my bag with me because we've got people in here this morning who might rob me? Well, no, because we know and they're all nice people and nobody would do that. But what do we need to be, or who do we need to be in our church? The robber. We need the robber to come in because the robber needs to find Jesus. Wouldn't it be interesting if we were in church where as soon as the service was ended, people thought, make sure I've got my phone and my keys and any money because we've got some robbers in here today. Yay! But of course, that's not how it is. Because is this a place where they could feel they could come? What about our injured person? And I expect many of you could align with this morning. There are times when you have thought, do you know what? I do feel like I'm lost and lonely and in need, and I just need somebody who's going to come alongside me. Do we learn from that? I wonder if this injured person, once the Samaritan had taken him off on his little old donkey and the innkeeper had looked after him and he'd paid some money and everything had been okay and he'd got better, I wonder if he was actually a priest or a Levite and if he would go out and walk along that road and say, I will now be different because of what has happened to me. Now, I wonder if any of those reasons are legitimate. And I wonder what Jesus would do. Well, it's easy, isn't it? He'd be the Samaritan. I don't know if you've ever heard the story of the farmyard where we have the chicken and the pig who are chatting. And as they're walking around the farmyard chatting to each other, they're saying, the farmer's such a good farmer. He looks after us so well. And the farmer is so kind. And the farmer's wife is really lovely. Comes out every day and gives us a bit of this to eat and gives us a bit of that. Looks after us. And do you know what? The farmer's wife sometimes comes out and says to the pig, I'm going to put some cream stuff on because it's very sunny and we've got to protect your skin. They're so kind to us. Wouldn't it be nice if we did something to help the farmer and the farmer's wife? Oh, says the horse, I know, they love to have a cooked breakfast. And so the chicken says, I think that's a fabulous idea. We could provide the breakfast. And the pig says, not much of a sacrifice for you. Total commitment from our Samaritan. He committed to the danger of the roadway. Jesus committed absolutely everything. And of course, Jesus understood the position of our priest and our Levite because he is a priest of the order of Melchizedek. He would fully understand the need to be pure and holy. So what did he do? He hugged lepers. He changed the culture. We mustn't live in the culture before Jesus came along. And of course, Jesus is our good Samaritan. Of course he is. He is somebody who has compassion. He binds up the wounds. It says in Psalm 147 that he heals the brokenhearted and binds up their wounds. And we get that in Isaiah 61 as well. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because the Lord has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and the opening of the prison to those who are bound. Jesus says, I'm going to come along and do all these things which break all of those preconceived ideas that your Levite and your priest and your Samaritan would have had. And Jesus is like the Samaritan. He sees the person who is in need and he stops and he gets messy. That Samaritan would have got messy. And like the Samaritan, he knows what it's like to be unwelcome. He went to Nazareth and said, Let me tell you the good news. And what did they do? They picked up stones and said, get out of here. Jesus reached out to a Samaritan woman and told her, the kingdom of God is for you too. And she says, but we're supposed to worship on this Mount Gerizim, and you say it's over here, and what about this, and what about that? And Jesus says, it's for you. All of this is for you. And it turned her life totally around. Jesus had tea with a tax collector who hid up a tree and thought he wouldn't be noticed. And Jesus said, come on down. I'm coming to your house for tea. Jesus called a Levite, and he came from his tax booth, and Matthew followed him. And he told the thief on the cross, today you will be with me in paradise. We have got a Jesus who understands all of these different people and breaks the culture and turns things upside down. And of course, we have a Jesus who understands the injured, because he was beaten and he was bruised, and ultimately he died. And if the Samaritan had said, don't worry, mate, I'll come back later, or I'll go and find a Jew, because I know it should be a Jew who comes to help you, what would have happened to our injured person who was half dead? He'd be completely dead. What would happen to the people who only hear snippets of good news? They won't hear the rest of it. If the Samaritan had not stopped right then and right there, we expect that that person would have died and been pushed off the road because they're in the way, as more people go from Jerusalem to Jericho or back again. And Jesus says, put all the expenses on my account, just like the Samaritan did. I've paid for it all. This is a poem by, I've just done those, so we're over here. This is a poem that you may or may not have heard. It was found on the wall of Mother Teresa's home, and it goes like this. People are often unreasonable, irrational, and self-centered. Forgive them anyway. If you are kind, people may accuse you of selfish, ulterior motives. Be kind anyway. If you are successful, you will win some unfaithful friends and some genuine enemies. Succeed anyway. If you are honest and sincere, people may deceive you. Be honest and sincere anyway. What you spend years creating, others could destroy overnight. Create anyway. If you find sincerity and happiness, some may be jealous. Be happy anyway. The good you do today will often be forgotten. Do good anyway. Give the best you have and it will be enough. Give your best anyway. In the final analysis, it is between you and God. It was never between you and them anyway. Who's it about? It's about an audience of one. We have this from William Booth. I will tell you the secret. God has had all that there was of me. There have been men with greater brains than I, even with greater opportunities. But from the day I got the poor of London on my heart and caught a vision for what Jesus Christ could do with me and them, on that day I made up my mind that God should have all of, of William Booth that there was. And if there is anything of power in the Salvation Army, it is because God has had all the adoration of my heart, all the power of my will, and all the influence of my life. William was not just a man of words, he was a man of action. And the Salvation Army, even today, continues to be active in bringing good news. And that's not through the rituals, and it's not through tambourine wavers and other things that might come into your mind. It's because they're prepared to get out and get dirty. It is prepared, they are prepared to save people who are on the streets struggling. It is because they are prepared to be love in action. Henri Nguyen says this: the real enemies of our life are the oughts and the ifs. They pull us backward into the unalterable past and forward into the unpredictable future, but the real life takes place in the here and now. What is happening today is what's important, and what is happening today may just disrupt your life. But we can't always go, oh, well, I remember when. We are the priests and the Levites of Abraham, of Moses, of going back. We look through all of our history, and this is how it's always been done, and this is how we need to do it. And then this inconvenience comes along, and I bless you and wish you well, and continue on my way. Whereas actually this is the here and now. This is the moment. There's a lady that I met the other day. She works for a mission organisation. And she was over in the country telling us about when she had been kidnapped. And she's been kidnapped apparently more than once. She said that the kidnappers were taking her. They'd taken her from her house, and they were taking her and somebody else and taking them off. And she said it was dark, and we were going through this wooded sort of area, and fell over, and they just shouted at us, said, get up, and move on. And then she said one of them fell over. And she said, my first thought was, get up. But she said, I stopped and knelt down and helped this person up. Because what would Jesus do? He would say, well, you weren't very nice to me. I can't believe it. My neighbour put the bins where I normally put my bins. You should see what I'm going to do next week. No, she said, what would Jesus do? He wouldn't care. He would still help that person up. And we see many of these little glimpses, don't we? And I'm going to read you just a very little thing about these people. I know you can't see the pictures particularly well. This is a project done by a photographer called Simon Bray. And he went to a church. And if we start in the top corner, I'm just going to read you very, very short little bits about each one of those. So Mary and Tom knew that Jane and Steve's car had been stolen, and they had one sitting on the drive because Tom had got a company car, so they let them use the car that they'd got. And Mary and Tom nominated Helen, the next one along, because she helped them sort out their family tree. And Helen nominated Christine because she was doing something for Home Start and needed to order something on eBay, didn't know how to do it, and Helen helped. And Christine helped Helen. So Christine nominated Joe because during COVID they were ill and Joe brought their groceries for them so that they could be in isolation. And Joe nominated Steve because he was good at making everyone feel included, and she said, whenever I go round, he will always give me a cup of tea and a hug and listen. And Steve nominated Janet because she's such a good teacher that he had learned how to do the PA in church. And that Janet was always prepared to come early on a Sunday to help if Steve wasn't too sure. And Janet, where have I got to? I'm rushing through these and lost my place. So Steve has nominated, Janet nominated Steve. Where have I got? I'm about in the middle here. Because He's always happy to come and help and has done things and said that he would do things for her because she's so busy during the week. And Steve nominated Bob because Bob has helped do a lot of things, and he said he would happily take on the weekly magazine, and Steve was so pleased. So Bob nominated a different Joe because she's so caring and she's really helpful to him and given so much support. And Joe nominated Mel because her kindness has been constant all through the years, and when she got the children, Mel was really helpful. And Mel nominated Yvonne because Mel had four children and Yvonne came along and helped her run the toddler group. And Yvonne nominated Chris because she's always been a willing volunteer to help with anything. Chris nominated Leslie because she thought, like many people in the church, that it had been spoken to Leslie that she always came in and helped out whenever anybody needed. And Leslie nominated Susan because she's a wonderful part of the Link to Hope project and been so supportive, and she's such a great friend. And Susan nominated Penny because she's wonderful at the meet and greet for refugees and so unassuming about it, and she says everyone needs kindness, don't they? All these people go to the same church. He did not wander the country. You don't have to do amazing big stop because the robbers are around moment. You just have to be Jesus to somebody. And sometimes that literally is welcoming them in. Sometimes that is saying, that's all right, come and sit in this chair. Sometimes that means not looking grumpy because somebody else has stolen your favourite mug. Fortunately, all of yours are the same colour, so you're okay. But you know what it's like? It's sometimes the tiniest thing that makes you disgruntled, that makes somebody else say, this is not a place that will include me. I help at the cafe at my church, and one of the people gently came up to me at the end as we were clearing up, and she said, I've just swept the floor in the kitchen. I said, oh, okay. She said, so I slept, and I was wearing trainers that had got treads on the bottom, you know, the sort that are a bit like wearing a tyre. And she said, so I've swept up the dried mud. I think it might be coming from your shoes. She said, so don't worry, we'll finish off. Would you like to come home? And she was very gentle and lovely, and we both laughed about it. But could have said, do you mind going home? Because there's mud on your shoes, and I've already swept up once. I'm going to have to do it again. Isn't it how we do these things and how we say these things? Does it make us feel that we are welcome here? So what would Jesus do? He would get down and get dirty in order to embrace the outcast. He would let everyone know that they may be sinful, battered, or broken, but there is still a place at his banqueting table. And the place at his banqueting table is not going to be right down there, because he has a hierarchy. These people are cleaner than these people, because he doesn't work like that. And how will they know that we are followers of Jesus? They will know us by our love. So I'm going to end with this song. It's not one to sing to. Do sit down. And hopefully it worked earlier. And hopefully it will all work again.